Yeah.
Just wanted to thank everyone for coming out tonight. Rabbi Steinmetz, I know you were promised no rain in LA. But the flip side is this is winter.
Right.
You're good. It's a really nice, great honor to welcome Rabbi Steinmetz here. He is the Rosh Kollel of the YU Community Kollel. So welcome to LA, welcome to our house. As I think most of you probably know Rabbi Steinmetz, he's from New York. We're all great people around him. He spent many years in YU, including REITS, Smicha Honors Program, Rav Shachar's Kollel, and the Kollel Elyon. He and his wife Shoshana and their kids live here and started the YU Kollel here. I've had the pleasure of attending a few of Rabbi Steinmetz's shiurim, and I really learned a lot, but really appreciate the high level of learning and his quick wit. So I assure you that you will all learn something tonight and maybe have a few laughs.
Okay. Thank you very much. So I should start by saying thank you to the hosts, to the Steinlofs for hosting us. Really a pleasure and an honor to be here for my first time. And, you know, without saying too much in front of them, because I don't think it's appropriate necessarily, even though you just violated that in front of me, but I won't do the same to you. The Steinlofs have generously, you know, kind of been founding donors in the Kollel. So people who have seen the website or have seen the brochure know that there's an investment on their part in this Kollel, and that's extremely, you know, generous and appreciated. But I think what speaks volumes even more than that is not the investment monetarily, which is important, and, you know, everyone's encouraged to do that as well. But additionally, that Shuli, and if we can extend to the Anziskas as well, Allison, are consistent, committed learners, and they're part of the Kollel in that way as well. And that investment speaks volumes and is so critical to the existence of the Kollel and also the existence of a vibrant Torah community and to the growth of such a community, to not only invest in the classic colloquial sense, but also to invest in the learning, to be part of it, to join for the shiurim. So Baruch Hashem, they set a great example, and B'yan Hara, this is a beautiful following that they have. This is a beautiful crowd that showed up here at the home for some learning on a Sunday night. It's a very special, it's supposed to be a part of it. Yeah, sorry, sheets are here. Some might be in the back as well. And hopefully we'll have a chance to learn a little bit together. It's going to be practical halacha. It is something that's relevant to our lives, but even, I think, more important in terms of the shiur we're delivering now, it's going to be something which we're going to dig a little bit deeper. Hopefully we're going to gain a better understanding of two different parts of the mitzvah of Hanukkah and the Yom Tov of Hanukkah in general. And with that, hopefully we'll come out of tonight and into Hanukkah with a much deeper appreciation and a much stronger commitment to the mitzvah and to the day. So the Yom Tov of Hanukkah, we know, is very much tied up with the mitzvah, with the concept, which is a din of hiddur mitzvah, right? Beautifying mitzvahs. How is it tied to hiddur mitzvah? Where do you see hiddur mitzvah in Neres Hanukkah? Anyone know? Where are some examples? What's the classic case of hiddur mitzvah by Hanukkah? A pretty menorah is the not classic case, which we're going to hopefully get to. Very good. But what's the most classic case? What does the Gemara call Hanukkah, people who light a certain way on Hanukkah? Mahadrin min ha-mahadrin. Sounds like it's a hashgacha. Sounds like it's a from place to eat. But in truth, mahadrin means to be mahadr in the mitzvah. It means to do a mitzvah very properly and very beautifully. And mahadrin min ha-mahadrin in the Chazal, in the Gemara and Shabbos and Daf Chaf Aleph, means that a person has to extend above and beyond the normal amount of hiddur, the more normal amount of beautification that involves in the mitzvah of general mitzvah satorah. In Chanukah, you go a little bit further. How so? Because generally speaking, we know, strictly speaking, Me'ikar Adin, if a person wants to be yotzei to the mitzvah of Chanukah, how many Chanukah menorahs do they need in their home?
One.
That's all you need. One Chanukah menorah. How many candles do you need every single night?
One.
And you'd be no yotzei. So what do? Mahadrin, go ahead, and not only do we have one Chanukah candle in our home, but we each light our own menorah. That's one level of mahadrin. Mahadrin, min mahadrin, is that we go above and beyond. And we not only light one per person in the home, but each person adds every single night another candle. So that's mahadrin, mina mahadrin. It's beautifying the mitzvah above and beyond the normal standard of hiddur. As we'll see soon, as Ms. Tassler pointed out, there's another level of hiddur that we're going to have to talk about and try to go in depth because it's a little bit questionable where it really comes from. But before that, what is the stress? Why are we so obsessed with hiddur mitzvah when it comes to Chanukah? Where does it come from that hiddur mitzvah is so intrinsically tied, so inherently linked with the day of Chanukah, with the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah? What is that connection between those two things? So the Mefarshim talk about this. The Beis HaLevi, that's Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the original Rabbi Yosef Dov. The famous Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik is the Rav Soloveitchik from Nights. The most famous Yosef Dov is? My son, very good. My son, Yosef Dov Steinmetz, who was born in February of this past year, named for the Rav, who was named for his great-grandfather, the Beis HaLevi, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the original Rabbi Yashaber. So Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Rabbi Yashar Ber, in the Beis Halev, in his Perish on the Torah, so he explains that the Heder Mitzvah here is because really the Jewish people could have gotten away with it. When we found the menorah, and we broke back into the Beis HaMikdash, and we reconquered our area, we could have gotten away with the little oil that we found. What could we have done? We could have made thinner wicks, and we could have let the oil last a lot longer that way. We didn't need a light with such fancy big wicks that would take up so much oil that we would then need a nace to make more and more oil every single night, or to make the oil go for longer, more and more every night, depending on how you learn the miracle as it happened. But we didn't need to do that. We could have just lit with thinner wicks, and it would have sufficed with a smaller flame. But what did Klal Yisrael do? Hider mitzvah. They went above and beyond. They chased that more beautiful, more robust mitzvah of Neros Chanukah with a thicker wick, with a nicer, brighter light. And therefore, they were mahadir. They made a hider. They beautified the mitzvah of Chanukah. So we too, whenever we keep Chanukah, we also have to commemorate that hider and do it ourselves as well. The truth is, some of the achronim say, it doesn't have to do with necessarily the size of the wick, but it's actually the nature of the oil. The oil which they found in the Beis HaMikdash was tameh. Right, it was impure. It wasn't pure shemen zayis in a sense of tara, tumah and tara, which we don't really observe those laws anymore nowadays. But back then, based on Mikdash, of course we did. So the Jewish people went searching for shemen tahor. But the halacha really is, we know from the Gemara, the halacha really is tumah dechuya b'tzibor, which means that if the entire tzibor, the entire community, is all tameh, then in most cases, karbanos are allowed to be offered. In many cases, karbanos are allowed to be offered, even though everyone's tameh. Generally speaking, a tameh cannot offer a karban, or a karban can't even necessarily offer on behalf of a tameh. But if the entire tzibor is tameh, so then tuma dechuya b'tzibor, or tuma hutra b'tzibor, tuma chlekas in the Gemara and Yuma, but tuma is pushed off. We don't worry about that halacha as much when it comes to an entire tzibor, an entire klal, and there's no chance to do anything in a way of tara. So what could the Jews have done? They found it's true, it was taka impure. The pach shemen was, tameh, it was no good. But really it wasn't no good. Why? Because everything was tameh. Tuma dechuya b'tzibor. They could have lit Hanukkah candles that 8 days. They could have lit it for as long as they wanted with shemen tameh. It wasn't a problem. But what did they do? They went out of their way looking for shemen tahor, for pure oil. And because they were mahadir, because they had a hider, they were trying to beautify the mitzvah by having shemen tahor, pure oil. So that too is why, some of the achronim, that's why we observe hider mitzvah to the extreme on Hanukkah, because we're also trying to mimic that hider that the Jewish people had on their own when they chased the shemen tahor. The truth is, it's a little bit questionable. Is lighting with pure oil, tahor, or shemen, is that really a hider mitzvah? What do we think of when we think of hider mitzvah? Give me an example of hider mitzvah, outside of Chanukah.
Esrog.
Okay, esrog. So what is mahudar about an esrog? What makes it hadar? What makes it hider?
No marks on it.
It's looks, exactly, right? It's looks. No marks on it. It's smooth. It's, I don't know, it's the right color. It's the right sort of shape. Those are the things we look for on an esrog. If I told you I had an esrog that's beautiful, gorgeous, but it's tameh, without knowing any halachas about whether you're allowed to use an esrog tameh, would you say that's a lack of hider? It's not beautiful? It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It might be as pretty as any other esrog you've ever seen. Happens to be, it's spiritually tameh. So what? What's the hider? What's the lack of hider? So it's not so clear that to use something tameh versus using something tahor is actually considered hider. Rabbi Yosef Engel has a long essay in his Otzras Yosef, which are his drushes. Rabbi Yosef Engel was a brilliant Galitzianer gon in Galicia. That's why he was a Galicianer going. You follow that? So he was a tremendous genius, really one of the biggest geniuses in our history. He was a prolific author, just wrote and wrote and wrote. We only have a fraction of what he wrote. We lost so much of it, but he was a brilliant genius. So he had so many different types of shtickel Torahs, very lomdish, a big mefalpel, a lot of pilpel. But he has a sefer called Otzras Yosef. Otzras Yosef was the drushes that he gave different times a year. It says usually it notes for you, especially in the new editions, they're very, very neatly printed. The guy who prints them is looking for donations, if anyone's interested. If I just inspired you to get into Rabbi Yosef Engel, let me know afterwards. So Rabbi Yosef Engel has a sefer called Otzras Yosef, which are his drushes. Now, you and I would not want to attend these drushes. They are 100 pages long. So I could only imagine how long it took him to say, if he talks as fast as me, maybe they were a short shear, fine. But if he talks at a normal pace, I don't know, I wouldn't necessarily want to sit through that. But Rabbi Yosef Engel has these drushes, Otzras Yosef. So in Otzras Yosef, he asks this question, is it really true? Is it really a hider mitzvah to do something bitahara? To do something in a pure way spiritually? It doesn't beautify the mitzvah in any way. So he garners support from a few places and tries to prove. One of them is actually Esrog, interestingly, but it's not for now. It's a wrong girsa in the Rambam, really. But he brings a lot of proofs for why Tumah and Tara also affect Hider when it comes to Hider mitzvah. And he concludes that it is true that if you do something in a pure way, then it's halachically mehudar. That also is considered a Hider mitzvah. So the Jewish people were mahadir in the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah. How? Like the Beis HaLevi told us, they chased to make sure they had a thicker wicks, and then they got the nace that it should last. Additionally, they were also mahadir in what way? They chased Shem and Tahor, and that too was a beautiful kiyum in Hidr Mitzvah. So the standard of Hidr Mitzvah is even higher. It's more on display when it comes to the Yomtif of Chanukah, and that's really the basis for that. And we see that again in the Mahadran and the Mahadran Min Mahadran, which doesn't really exist in other cases. That's what the Yosef Engel quotes from the Chiddush HaRim. The Chiddush HaRim was the grandfather of the Sfas Emes. The Sfas Emes wrote, most of us are familiar with the fact that he wrote Sefer Chasidus. He wrote, we have a Sfas Emes here every week on Friday mornings at Adas Torah at 8:30. It starts about 8:30 after 7:45 minyan. So we learn Sfas Emes on the Parsha. It's a 20-minute shiur, happens every week. It goes online also. Beautiful Divrei Torah from the Sfas Emes. Every other page of the Sfas Emes quotes Chiddush HaRim. Who's the Chiddush HaRim? It was his grandfather. The Sfas Emes' father, he did not have an easy life. He had he did not have an easy life. He did not have an easy life, to say the least. So he did not, the family in general lost a lot of children, and he was a very, very sick person. The Chiddush HaRim lost a lot of children, and really the only one that lasted was the Sfas Emes, his father. But when the Sfas Emes was a boy, his father already passed away. So the Sfas Emes was really raised by the Chiddush HaRim, by his grandfather. So every other page, he quotes the Chiddush HaRim. Every page, he quotes a Chiddush, he quotes a Dvar Torah, something from Chassidus, from the Chiddush HaRim. His style, in terms of learning the Torah, Gemara is a different story, but in style, in terms of learning the Torah, the Chumash and the Moadim is very much in line with the Chiddush HaRim. So here in his Chiddush HaMan Chanukah, the Sfas Emes quotes from his grandfather, and he says, you see here, that part of Hidr Mitzvah is not only the physical, is not only the looks, as we spoke about before, the no blemish, the nice shape, the right color, that's for sure hidr, but additionally there's another level of hidr, which is a spiritual hidr, which is a hidr where a person does something in the greatest spiritual, greatest halachic sense, that's also a hidr mitzvah. And this is going to tie into something we'll hopefully get to Bli Neder Mit Hashem by the end. So we have Mahadran Min Mahadran, those are the parts of the mitzvah of Chanukah that we're aware of. But Ms. Tassler pointed out before that there's another level of hidr, l'chaira, there's another level of hidr that seems to exist, which doesn't get as much airtime. If you look in source number one, you have a Mishnah Berurah. Well, if you don't throw your sheets on the floor, you can look at source number one. But if you throw it on the floor, you can't look. So if you look at source number one, in the source sheets, you'll see as follows. The Mishnah Berurah says in Siman Tav Reish Ayin Gimel, he's quoting from the Shulchan Aruch, and he says, the Mishnah Berurah, Kasvu Asvarim, the earlier books say, Shetov Shekol Echad, or Tov Kol Echad, Sheyatriach Lasos Lo Menorah Yafeh, everyone should try their best to find a beautiful menorah, to get for themselves, acquire for themselves a beautiful menorah, lefi kocho, within reason. If you don't have a budget to get a beautiful menorah, so you shouldn't overextend. But you gotta try to get a beautiful menorah within reason. The chena neros, yase, yafe. And so too the candles should be made in a beautiful way, and that's what you should acquire. The Be'er Hetiv quotes this as well from earlier sources that the Mishnah Berurah is probably referencing too. And the Be'er Hetiv stresses that we should have a silver menorah. We see a lot of that, right? A lot of people have a silver menorah. My grandmother was very into silver. She, for our wedding, she bought us 100 different silver things. So she passed away a few years ago. We love and miss her, but we don't love silver as much. So we were able to we melted some of it down and sold it. We were in a tight spot, okay? We were in a tight spot. So we sold some of it. I'm not sure if she bought my menorah. God bless her. But she was so obsessed with silver. She bought us a salt shaker and a salt dipper. So I said, Grandma, like, how many times are we going to wash on Shabbos that we need so many salt things? She's like, no, some people like to shake it, some people like to dip it. So I was like, but we could choose one of them. She's like, it's a good chumrah to do both. Because you love silver so much, I got to watch my health over here. I can't have so much salt in my challah. Anyway, so a lot of people have a silver menorah, right? That's a normal thing you see, a nice polished silver menorah. The real reason we hate silver is because you got to polish it all the time. Yeah, you could dip it, but then you dip it and then they rip you off and then it doesn't really dip and then they break the handle while they dip it. This all happened to us until we sold it. Okay, so anyway, so the Be'er Hetiv quotes to have a silver menorah. That's a beautiful thing that he says you should do. The Kav HaChaim quotes from earlier sources. The Chesed L'Avram is the most famous source who lists a whole bunch of possibilities in terms of which type of material menorah is best to have. And above silver, he puts gold. Anyone here ever see a golden menorah? I've never seen that, but he says ideally a person would have a golden menorah. Okay, very nice. The post can deal with an interesting question. Are you really lighting in a silver menorah? How does the menorah work? You have a silver menorah with all the branches, and then what do you put in top on those in the holders?
The glass.
Glass cup. So are you really lighting in a silver menorah? You're really lighting in a glass cup. So is that the post can talk about an interesting thing? You have to do tefillah on the glass cups. If you buy a shot glass and you use it for the top, it's really a kli that's used for drinking. So does it need tefillah's kelim, or are you allowed to light in a kli that wasn't tovah for tefillah's kelim? That's an interesting question. But let's say we bought the regular candle holders. So you're really lighting in glass. You're not really lighting in silver, no? Suppose I'm saying, nah, why not? Why isn't that a problem? Because really the main thing, the ikkar, the main thing that defines this candelabra is the silver, is the branches. Okay, you got to put the glass as a technicality, as a practicality to be able to hold the fire in it. But you're really, that's batel, that's negligible. That's not a meaningful halachic substance there between you and the silver. So that counts as lighting in a silver menorah. Some of the modern day poskim, they point out, what's the hiddur in silver? This is an interesting question to consider, by the way. What is the hiddur? What's beautiful about silver? So there's two possibilities. What's beautiful about silver? You tell me. I'm biased. I hate silver.
It's valuable.
It's valuable. Good. One answer. What's the other answer?
Shine.
It looks beautiful, right? So there's two possibilities. Is it because... So that's exactly the nafkamina we're about to get to. Here we go. So let's say you have the following case. Let's say you and I have two menorahs, and we're trying to decide which menorah we should use. So you have a tarnished silver menorah, pure silver, and I have a... I have a, this is actually accurate, I have a fake silver menorah, a tinfoil menorah, I don't know. I have a fake silver menorah, but mine looks much more beautiful. Mine's much more shine, much more polished. It looks gorgeous in the window. Which one is better to use? Which one's better to use?
The more valuable.
You would think the more valuable one, because this is a more chash of a thing, it's a more significant thing. The Yerushalmi in Maseches Yuma in Perek Vav has a suffix about a similar concept by Karbanos. Is it meshubach b'mare or meshubach b'gufa? What's more important, the fact that it look nicer or the fact that it actually be inherently more valuable? And the Gemara assumes like you. The Yerushalmi assumes that the value is more important. But the postman say that's a Gemara about karbanos. So karbanos, the value is what you're offering to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in the hiddur mitzvah of menorah, is it about the value or is it really about the display in the window that people should see, they should observe a persumenisa that's beautified? So the postman say even a tarnished silver, it's not puzzle. We're not saying it's puzzle. We're not saying it's invalid. But even a tarnished silver is not as good because the more beautiful menorah will actually look more beautiful in the window. That's really the hiddur we're looking for when it comes to hiddur mitzvah of menorah. So that's an interesting discussion in the postgame. But you see that Yerushalmi coming into play, that Yerushalmi has a suffix, a doubt, whether it's a goes based on the value or based on the looks. Maybe menorah is determined by the looks, because that's really what we're trying to do. Be mefarsim in the nais, show it to the public and show it in a beautiful way. That's about the mara, that's about the looks. Maybe unlike karbanos, but we could all be more like you and polish our silver if we still own it. Okay. Yeah, ostensibly, this is all very logical, right? Hiddur mitzvah means to beautify mitzvos. It's a mitzvah to light Hanukkah candles, so it's a mitzvah to be mehadar, the mitzvah of Hanukkah candles. The same way we do mehadrim and ahadrim in lighting, we should also make a beautiful menorah with beautiful candles. It should be on a beautiful display, and everything should look gorgeous. That makes a lot of sense, right? Does anyone have any questions about that? Any problems with that?
Well, it's not really on that, but the whole point about them trying to find the oil that was the purest was like the spiritual form of hiddur mitzvah.
Right.
So then, wouldn't that kind of translate to seeing it through the window? Like, even though, yeah, the tinfoil menorah looks more beautiful, the other one has more value. Like, I don't know if that translates.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, but the truth is those are both physical values. Looks and worth are both physical values. So either way, we're not really getting onto the spiritual. But you're right, then maybe it should be a different determination if we're really basing it on the hiddur of the Beis HaMikdash. So if that hiddur, like that, you know, one, some of the Achronim said was based on the Tara, maybe there's an extra hiddur in that, but we also have a physical hiddur. We also have a looks or value type of hiddur as well. Yeah, anyone have a problem with this? Does this make perfect sense? This should be hiddur mitzvah, right? There's no issues? Any issues? Okay, so let me ask you a question. Someone in the back have an issue? Usually people in the back have issues. No? Okay. So here we go. What is the mitzvah of lighting menorah? What's the mitzvah?
Persumenisa
for sure is what stands behind the mitzvah. Now let me ask you a different question. When you take a lulav and esrog, what's the cheftza shel mitzvah? Meaning, what's the object of mitzvah that we're using? Easy. Toss up. The lulav and the esrog are the object of the mitzvah. What is the object of the mitzvah when it comes to lighting menorah? Think.
Light.
Ah.
The oil.
The oil, the candles, those are good answers. The oil or light, right? Is the menorah a chetzah shel mitzvah? There's no mitzvah to have a menorah. You could put a menorah, you could put eight menorahs every night and keep adding menorahs, it's not going to help. The mitzvah is the lights. The mitzvah is to brighten up the choshech, right? That's the mitzvah in halacha and in hashkafa, is to have the flame burning. So I could understand if you tell me there's a hiddur mitzvah, you can beautify the mitzvah by making a bigger flame, by adding more flames, by making a more beautiful, more pure flame. All of that I can understand. But is there really a hiddur mitzvah? Is it beautifying the mitzvah if I get a more beautiful menorah to hold the flame? Where does that come from? What's that concept? So the truth is that we can address this question. This really leads us into the crux of our shir. We can address that question really in two different ways. We can either tweak our understanding of the mitzvah of menorah, the mitzvah of Neros Chanukah, or we can tweak our understanding of the idea of hiddur mitzvah. So let's try to do both of those things for the next few minutes. Let's try to understand a little bit more deeply what the true mitzvah of Neres Chanukah is, and if that doesn't lead us in the right direction, then maybe we'll pivot and we'll be able to talk about Hiddur Mitzvah, and we'll come to a deeper understanding of what's going on in this halacha. So if you look in source number 2, you have a Maharal. The Maharal is actually quoted by the Avnei Nezer. You have the Avnei Nezer in source number 4, but you don't need it yet. The Maharal is a very interesting thing that the Avnei Nezer made famous. The Avnei Nezer was known as the Sachachav Rebbe. He was the Rebbe in Sachachav. That's how he got that name. They didn't just make it up. He lived in a place like that. So he wrote the Avnei Nezer. He also wrote a sefer called Igle Tal, which we've mentioned at least a few times in the Hilchos Shabbos here on Tuesday nights. The Igle Tal was written by the same author as the Avnei Nezer. So the Avnei Nezer was a big Chassidish Rebbe, but he's also a big Paisik, a big Gain, and a tremendous Lamdin. Wow, an amazing set of Sfarim that he wrote called Avnei Nezer, which is really Chuvas, Halach Lamaisa. So he wrote Chuvas. How many you can count, you can find, but he's one of the primary, you know, Hasidic examples of real halachists, real people who wrote tshuvas that were major, that were incorporated into halacha in a serious way. The Avnei Nezer was a tremendous genius and tremendous contribution to halacha and to the world of Hasidus. So in the Avnei Nezer, in Or HaChaim Siman Tav Kuf 500, he quotes from the Maharal. The Maharal here is in source number 2 for you. The Maharal has, interestingly, he only quotes the first Maharal, but the second one's so much better. But he quotes from the first Maharal as follows. He says, the Maharal clearly has a suffix over here. He says the Maharal has a debate within internally whether there is such a thing as a ner without a holder. Meaning, when the Torah, when Chazal, when anyone says ner, if you read in the bold with me in source number 2, kimi bayale, the question that the Gemara that he's referring to is asking, im haner shehu akli hamakabel gam kein mechlal haner. He wants to know if the kli, the utensil, which contains the oil in which the wick floats, upon which the flame resides, is that all considered the ner? Or no, the ner is the flame, and the kli just holds the flame. How do you define that? Now, we would think, what is this? This is a machshava sefer. So he's talking about machshava. He's trying to understand machshava. And he says, v'nishar b'teku. Teku means we don't know the answer. The Gemara doesn't answer it. But the truth is, as a very halacha lamaisa application, very practical application, if you look again in source number 2, the second paragraph, here the Maharal and Ner Mitzvah and Chelek Beis, it's much more clear. I don't know why the Avnei maybe didn't have this, but he didn't quote from this. Ha'echad says the Maharal in terms of a menorah, Masherov Olam Nohagim Lasos Neros Shashayv Lahadikbo. He says so many people, a majority of people even says, so many people make Neros, they make candles for Chanukah out of wax. They use wax candles. We know it's nice to use Shemen Zayis because that mimics the Nes of Chanukah much more. That's how it happened in the Mikdash. But that's one reason that it's a problem. But Kilifia Nira, Shu Pusel Lener Chanukah Lagamre. You hear that? You don't want to say that too loudly because people really do this. A Ner Shaiva, a Ner, which is, you know, made up of a wax candle, is going to be Pusel Lener Chanukah. You cannot use that to light candles on Chanukah. Whoa. Why? De Lo Nikra Ner Klau. That's not called an air. What do you mean? Ner means candle. Of course it's called an air. There's a fire on a wick. What's wrong with that? This is Rak Zeh Nikra Ner. Shenosnin Hashemen Bikli. The only time you have a halachically defined ner, a candle, is when there is a kli which holds the fire in it, which holds the oil or the wax in it, that then holds the fire. Umenichin Sham Hapsila. In that kli, in that utensil, you place the wick that floats there. Shezen Nikra Ner. Says the Maharal, unbelievable. The Maharal says, you cannot have a menorah without a menorah. If you just have wax candles and you light 8 of them or even 1 of them and make her a din, for Chanukah, that does not suffice. That is not good enough. You need a kli, you need a utensil which holds those things in place. The Maharal is referencing also, which the Avnei Nezer just explicates, but there is a pecking order, like we said before, a hierarchy in terms of which kelim to use, the Chesed L'Avram that we quoted in the very beginning, the Mishnah Berurah, the Be'er Heitav we're referencing, which lists for you different types of materials which are good for a kli. And in that context, the Chesed L'Avram says, but you can't use the shell of an egg or the shell of a onion or something like that to hold the neros. So what's he clearly assuming? You need a kli. Some of them are good and some of them are disqualified. Some of them qualify as a kli, as a utensil. Some of them are no good because they're not significant enough. They're too disposable. They don't balance themselves well. For whatever reason, they're not considered a utensil. But you need a utensil. That's part of the definition of Neros Chanukah. That's what the Avnei Nezer quotes from this amazing Maharal. If you look in source number 3, the Avnei Nezer has another brilliant raya, brilliant proof from the Gemara in Yuma and Chav Dalet Beis. The Gemara says like this. It's jumping, it's parachuting into a Gemara, but we'll try to learn about it as much as possible without getting too bogged down. But Zesha Sidras HaMenorah Lechayev, the Gemara asks a question. Again, the context is important in terms of understanding why the Gemara is asking a question, but the question we can still understand without it. Zarsha Sidras HaMenorah Lechayev, who does the Avod in the Beis HaMikdash? Who does the service, the Karbanos? The Kohanim, right? The Kohanim do the Avodah. So I'm not a Kohen. I'm a Yisrael. So I can't just walk into the Mikdash and do Avodah. Some Avodahs I'll be Chayiv Misa for doing. Some of them I won't be Chayiv Misa. But a Zar Sha'avad, if a Zar, a non-Kohen, a stranger, literally, goes into the Mikdash and does Avodah, so depending on the case, if it's an Avodah Tama, meaning it's a complete Avodah, it's an Avodah that finishes the sacrificial process, so he'll be Chayiv Misa for doing that Avodah. So I would be Mischayiv Misa if I did such a thing. So the Gemara says, in that context, Zesh Yisidar Zamanor Lechayiv. The person who arranges, who sets up the menorah, meaning puts the candles into the menorah, into the candelabra, it should be chayiv misa for doing avoda in the Beis HaMikdash if he's not a kohen. So Mar says, why? Ikanesinas psila. No, nasan psila lechayiv. If he puts in the wick, he's already going to be chayiv. Ikanesinas shemen, pouring the shemen. No, nasan shemen lechayiv. Ika hadlaka, hadlaka is not an avoda. So what's the Gemara talking about over here? What are you going to be chayiv misa for? So Rashi fills in the blanks. Rashi says, baboker, hayu misalkin es haneros shel zahav. In the morning, they would remove the golden candles, min ha-menorah, to take them out. Glikaneach efar and yafeh, because they wanted to clean out the ashes, right? The ember, what was left over from the previous day. V'chozer nekov en osamba. And then what do they do after that, obviously? Replace them, right? They put them back into the menorah. And on that, says Rashi, bahari avodah tama. That's considered an avodah. To place the neros into the candelabra is considered an avodah. So ask the Abnezer, what's the avoda? I understand it sets up, it helps make a kli sharis. I don't know. It sets up for the mitzvah, the avoda, the carbon, so to speak, of lighting the menorah. But putting candles into the menorah, that's not an avoda. That's just preparatory. That's a custodial task. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's a nice job to have. I would want it if I was a Kohen. But I don't know. What does that have to do with the avoda? So what does the Abnezer see? The menorah itself, that kli is the mitzvah. It's not just that a person has to light candles. That is true, but if you would find a way to make the candles levitate, or if you, in the case that Maharal was talking about, you had wax candles that you kind of just stuck into a windowsill by melting the bottom or something like that, that would not suffice. Why? Because you see in this Gemara in Yuma, says the Avnei Ezer, very creatively, you see in this Gemara in Yuma that the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash itself was defined as the kli which was in it. Okay, then they had to light that menorah. Obviously, you also have to light it, but the mitzvah, the pasuk says, is Ya'aruch es neroseha. What does Ya'aruch mean with an ayin? Ya'aruch. Anyone here Sephardi? Yeah, but you're not supposed to be here, really. So, Ya'aruch, not bad, right? Yeah, it's normal. Normal to do that, right? Okay. So, what does Ya'aruch mean? Very good. To set, to organize, to arrange. So, what's the mitzvah of Neros in the Beis HaMikdash? Ya'aruch is Neroseh. What does that mean? To arrange, to organize, to be Masader, Unkla says. To set up the Neros in the Beis HaMikdash. That's the mitzvah. To make a menorah, to make Neros Chanukah, to make Neros in the Beis HaMikdash, that was the mitzvah. Says the Abnezer, you see right here, that the definition of a ner is not just the flame, but it's actually the kli, which holds the flame as well. That's part and parcel, the definition. And based on that, the Abnezer says an incredible thing, source number 4. Vim hidlik ner Chanukah b'mesha eno kli, lo yatsa. If a person lights Neros Chanukah, they take, again, this is a common example, they take wax candles, you kind of like light the bottom, you melt and you stick it into the table or into a windowsill or a ledge or something like that, and you light it that way, you will not be yotzei, says the Avnezer. You will not have done the mitzvah of Neros Chanukah on Chanukah. Wow. We know people do this. This is scary. But that's what the Avnezer says. Why? Because you see the definition of ner in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore what Rav Meisher Sternbach points is out in one of his tshuvas, in tshuvas on Hagos, Rav Meisher Sternbach is still alive. He's the Gaivit in Eretz Yisrael. So he has also a prolific author, so many svarim, really impressive author. So in Tshuva Sonhagos, that's his Tshuva svarim. He used to have 6 volumes, then he had 7. That's usually how it goes, 6 and 7. We're doing a little math here. So 6 is good for Chanuk also, then it's 8 after that. Then we stop, okay? Then we stop. But in Tshuva Sonhagos, there's 7 volumes. They just printed a Mafteach, a brilliant, amazing index Mafteach to the whole work. But he has 7 volumes of Tshuva Sonhagos. So in there, in the third chelik, I believe in the third volume, Rav Meisher Sternbach says that the Avnei Nezer is a big chiddush. It's a novel idea. No one said it until him, but we are supposed to mimic the Mikdash. The point of Neros Chanukah is, and this is a shir unto itself, by the way, but the point of Neros Chanukah is, in a way, to mimic what happened to the Beis HaMikdash. So it makes sense that if in the Mikdash there were candles, and there was a candelabra, and there was a whole menorah, and a whole kli, it makes sense what the Avnei Nezer says, that we should mimic that as well. Like we said, that's a real chumrah. People we know very well don't always keep that. Some people do have wax candles they stick into a ledge. Some people do light candles that way. But the Abnezer thought this was a problem. The Abnezer thought that it wasn't a kosher menorah. That's what we titled the shir, very cornily, but not even corny enough to be funny, just like a bad title. The case of the missing menorah. So this is the case of the missing menorah. There is no menorah. There's candles. There's lights. There's eight of them. It's perfectly lit up. It's exactly what it's supposed to be, but it's missing a menorah. It's missing menorah. Is that good, says the Aben Ezer? No, it's not. Now let's go back to our original question. We asked, we mentioned there's a concept of hither mitzvah. We noted the unique tie, the intrinsic link between hither mitzvah and, I'm not sure what this hand motion was, by the way. I think in Y-Yusmich, they teach you, like, show what you're teaching. Like, if you're a shepherd, you're supposed to, like, shepherd your flock. I don't really know how to shepherd flock, but you probably just walk. They probably do GPS nowadays anyways. But the point is that this was nothing. But there's a link. I think this is better. There's a link between hither mitzvah and an Eros Chanukah, correct? We spoke about what that link is. Shemen Torah, Shemen Tameh. We spoke about using a thick wick, using a thin wick. Those are the Hidurim, spiritually and physically, in Eros Chanukah. And that's why we mimic that with Mahadran and Mahadran Min Mahadran on Chanukah. And we said, oh, another example, Ms. Tasso's example that the Mishnah Berurah said as well, which is that you use a silver, beautiful menorah. And we asked, what are you talking about, a silver, beautiful menorah? Why is that hither mitzvah? The mitzvah is the neros. The mitzvah is the candle. So light a nicer candle, but the menorah has nothing to do with the mitzvah. What do we answer now? The menorah is part of the mitzvah. It's part of the definition of the mitzvah. That's what the Aben Ezer is telling us. You can't be yotzei neros Chanukah without a menorah. The menorah is part and parcel, the definition of the mitzvah of lighting neros Chanukah. So it's not just about the flame, but it's about that which holds the flame as well. It's about the kli, the utensil which holds the flame in it, which holds the oil in it. So you have to beautify that mitzvah. That is, in fact, your esrog. That is your lulav. That is your chetz v'shel mitzvah. That's the object which you're using to perform the mitzvah of neros Chanukah. So hither mitzvah, of course, should apply to that as well. Yeah, but not everyone agrees to this Aben Ezer. Like we noted a few times already, a lot of people do light those wax candles on the windowsills. So what's with that? So if you look in source number 5, you'll find another Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah earlier, in Siman Tav Reish Ayin Aleph. The Mishnah Berurah just says like a davar pashut, very simple to him, very obvious. He just throws it as a one-liner. V'hu adin, kishim midabkim neros shayva b'kosel. When you have a situation where you're just sticking the wax candles into the wall or into the windowsill, the ledge, he says like it's fine, you're doing that. So they shouldn't be too close together. It shouldn't be put in the windowsill like this, because then no one's going to see that it's different candles. They're going to think it's one big torch. You got to separate them about a finger's breadth apart. But what's the Mishnah Berurah obviously assuming? It's totally fine to do that. It's totally fine to do that. Where's your kli? Where's your menorah? Where's your, what the Aben Ezer was quoting from Maharal, that the ner includes the kli which holds it? So the Mishnah Berurah doesn't have it at all. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't have it at all. The truth is, the whole source for this, that you need a kli, really comes from more Kabbalistic sources. The Aben Ezer tried to prove it in the Gemara, that's true, but no one said it explicitly in the Gemara. No one said it ever in Shulchan Aruch, in any sefer of Psak Halacha until the Aben Ezer. The only source we have, the original source, seems to be from the Rabbi Yitzchak ben Aravid, the Rabbi Yitzchak Sagi Nahar, who was a Mekubal. He was a Mekubal. And the way he introduces the Stei Chemet points this out in an essay on the topic. The Stei Chemet says, the way that Rabbi Cheskel Medini, the way that, Aswardisher also, The way that this halacha was, I'll say revealed to the Rabbi Tzach Sagi Nohar, the son of the Ravid, he says, Eliyahu told me the following halacha. Eliyahu and Navi told me the following halacha. That's amazing and inspiring and happens to me sometimes also, but I don't know if that's usually the way we determine halacha lamaisa things. Might be nice Kabbalah, might be a good chumrah, might be a good derech sod, a secret that's being revealed to the Ravid's son, but I don't know if that's, generally speaking, the accepted practice la halacha. So that's what this Eichemet said. It must be derech sod, some Kabbalistic mysterious maila, a better way of doing the mitzvah, but not necessarily binding in halachic terms. Yeah, the majority opinion is like this Shulchan Aruch, is like this Mishnah Berurah, sorry. Rav Vosner and his Chuvas, Rav Binyamin Zilber and his Aznid Berurah, the Shvas Yankiv, all of them paskin this way. Rav Sternbach, who we quoted before, who defended the Aben Ezer, Rav Sternbach says, yeah, but nobody said this until the Aben Ezer, so really everyone's going to be yotzei with those wax candles as well. Rav Schechter has in his Sefer Nefesh HaRav, Rav Schechter from YU, has a Sefer Nefesh HaRav, that Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav, was also a makel on this, was lenient about this. He didn't think that you needed a kli, but that's all it says in the Sefer, that Rav Soloveitchik didn't like the people being machmer about this. When you hear it from Rav Schechter's mouth, the story goes a little differently. When you hear it from Schechter's mouth, it goes like this. I'm not good at imitations, so I won't do imitation. I'll save my Rebbe, so I'm a little scared to do an imitation, but I'll share with you the story anyway. So he said that he was a young Rebbe. He was already, I think, giving shir in YU, if I remember correctly. He started giving shir when he was, I'm not sure what age, he was the Rosh Kol already when he was 26. So he puts us all to shame. But he started being a Rebbe and she was giving a shir. So he saw in the dormitories, the boys, that's what he says, the dormitories, the boys, they were lighting candles in this way. They would melt the bottom of the wax candle, stick it to the windowsill and light candles that way. So Schechter, in all his gaonus and genius at the age of whatever, 26, 30, whatever he was, he said to the boys, he said, you know, you really should have a kli. You really should have a menorah. It's mefurish in the Aben Ezer. Everyone's probably like, what's an Aben Ezer? Like, who's an Aben Ezer? What are you talking about? But he knew everything already. Fine. So he said, it's a Mefurisha Aben Ezer. So they were, you know, nervous because Rav Schechter was saying that the halacha is that they're not being Yotzi Neros Chanukah. So they went to the Rav. And they asked the Rav, is it true that we need a kli? So they said, who told you that you need a kli? So they said, Rav Shechter. So the way Rav Shechter, I'm just quoting Rav Shechter. Rav Shechter says that the Rav responded, tell Shechter he is crazy. That's what he said about Rav Shechter. So I didn't say it. The Rav said it. But Rav Shechter is obviously not crazy. He has an Amnei Nezer over here. But the Rav was using his sense of humor, I guess, to put his Talmud in his place the way he saw it. So Rav Shechter is comfortable saying the story, though, anyway. So the point is that the Rav was certainly makel, was certainly lenient on this halacha l'maisa, so that you don't need a kli, and therefore the menorah is not really part of the mitzvah at all. So what does that leave us with the problem then? We ask the question. Hiddur mitzvah is a great thing. It's very beautiful. We all are pro hiddur mitzvah, right? If we took a vote right now, everyone would raise their hand, pro hiddur mitzvah, yes? Okay, we're pro hiddur mitzvah. We think it should apply to Hanukkah especially, right? We already defended that. We thought it should apply to a menorah because the Avnei Nezer told us you need a menorah. A menorah is part of the mitzvah. You can't really do the mitzvah without a kli. So the kli is part of the definition of the mitzvah. So obviously you need hiddur mitzvah and the kli as well. That's the chefzah shel mitzvah. That's the object which we're using for the mitzvah. What did the Mishnah Berurah tell us? And what did all the poskim disagree with Avnei Nezer? The kli is not really necessary. You could light the bottom of a wax candle, stick it to your windowsill, and be yotzei that way. Avram Shor has a sefer Alekach V'Alibum, a few different topics. So he has one on Hanukkah. I never looked at it before until last week. I never looked at any of his farm before until last week, but Beagle Eisen's, people here know Beagle Eisen? Ah, okay. Beagle Eisen from, in Brooklyn, so they send me Svarim sometimes. So they sent me 4 boxes last week. They don't send receipts, interestingly, conveniently. They send boxes and my card gets charged. I have no idea how much it costs. So they sent the box of five boxes of Svarim. So one of the Svarim was the Halakach V'Alibub. He wanted me to try it on, he wanted me to try it, meaning he wanted to make him money, but okay. He wanted me to try Halakach V'Alibub on Hanukkah, so it's taka, it's nice, it's very nice. It's chassidish, it's not really my style usually, but he says nice divrei Torah, he has nice messages, and he also combines a little bit of halacha there, so he says an interesting story. I was perusing the Sefer last Erev Shabbos. By perusing, I mean sleeping on the Sefer, but I got one thing before I fell asleep. So he has a very interesting story. It's a quote, a chassidish Rebbe, I never heard of him, Shlomo Mikarlin. If I had any chassidus in me, I probably would have heard of him, but. So he, every year, he used to light with wax candles. He would do this. He would light the bottom, he would stick it to the windowsill, and that's how he'd light Hanukkah candles. Why was he so makbid on that? Everyone else likes to use olive oil. So he said a beautiful message. He said that the way Hanukkah is supposed to be is that we're supposed to light for 8 days, but the roshem, the impact, is supposed to be had on us for the rest of the year and for the rest of our lives. He said, when I light with wax candles, I stick them into the windowsill, and there's a mark on the windowsill, and then it drips the whole 8 days. And the rest of my year, I guess his Rebbetzin wasn't so makbid on cleaning them up. The rest of my year, I can look at the windows and I could say, I remember Hanukkah. Hanukkah's message is still with me. He says, 1 year, I don't know why, but he didn't say in the story why, but he didn't have wax candles, so he had to use oil. And something happened that there was a shtickle of fire, nothing too terrible, but it burnt the wall. And he was besimcha, he was dancing, he was so happy, because, oh, even without wax candles, I have a roshim, I have an impact the rest of the year of my Hanukkah candles. So some people really did it that way. But that's because, like we just defended it, it's not really part of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is the lights. The mitzvah is the neros. It's the candle. The Avnei Nezer has a nice chumrah, but the majority opinion is not that way. So what's the hiddur? What's the beautification of the mitzvah? If you got a silver menorah, you got a beautiful candelabra, why is that a hiddur mitzvah? The mitzvah is the neros, is the lights. So you make a beautiful candle, what does that help with the lights? So we tried, you know, tweaking our understanding of what Neros Chanukah, the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neros, was, and I think we accomplished that within the Avnei Nezer, but now we're stuck. We're at a crossroads here. If we understand the Avnei Nezer, we're going to be stuck with a Chumrah. Most of the people don't hold the Avnei Nezer, so then how do we answer our question from four? So instead of re-understanding Neros Chanukah, let's stop and let's pivot to a different discussion. Let's try to understand something different about Hiddur Mitzvah. What does Hiddur Mitzvah mean? So until now we called it beautification of mitzvahs, which is correct. If you look in the Gemara in Shabbos on source number 6, stuff, Kuf Lam Gimel, Amud Beis and Masechet Shabbos, the Gemara tells us from a pasuk, Zekeli Vanvehu, we have in the Shira, that the Kaddish, this is my God and I will beautify him, Ve'anvehu. So the Gemara probably picked up the fact that what does it mean you can't beautify a Kaddish Baruch Hu, you can't make a Kaddish Baruch Hu more beautiful. So what does it mean? Ve'hisna'e lefanav b'mitzvos. It means, hisna'e, become beautiful, beautify yourself before him, b'mitzvos, with mitzvos. How so? Asei lefanov, make before him sukkah na, lulav na, shayfer na, tzitzis na, sefer Torah na, uksov bo lishmo. We'll get back to that soon. So the Gemara says a few instances, shofar, sukkah, sefer Torah, lulav, all these cases you should make a nice sefer Torah, a nice lulav, a nice esrog. Hiddur mitzvah. This is the source for hiddur mitzvah, zekei livan veyu. So you see, the chefzah shel mitzvah, the object of the mitzvah, the esrog, or the lulav, or the sefer Torah, should be beautiful. That's a hiddur mitzvah. We very, very well understand that, correct? That's very obvious and easy for us to understand. What's not so obvious is something the Rishonim already allude to, the Rishonim already hint to in a few places. I gave you 2 examples in source number 7 and 8. If you remember from before, 7 follows 6 and 8 follows 7. So that was part of what we're talking about here. So in source number 7, you have an example. 8, you have an example. But before we get to that, Tosfos and Brachos on the Chaf Aleph and Beis say that really, strictly speaking, a person could be Yotzei davening by listening to someone else daven through the concept of Shomei Ka'ona. Very good. Through the mechanism of Shomei Ka'ona. Meaning I could listen to someone else davening. I have in mind to be Yotzei with them. And we're enough connected, the Jewish people, that I could be Yotzei through their davening. But Tosfos and Brachos on the Chaf Aleph and Beis say that there's a better way to be Yotzei your davening. How? Do it yourself. I mean, is it maybe an additional level, but to do it yourself, daven yourself, say all the words yourself. What's better about that? So the thing Tosfos have a lashon there, it's mehudar tfei, chashiv hidar tfei, to say it yourself. What's the hidar? Is there a chetza shel mitzvah? Is there an object in front of you that you're making more beautiful? So what does Tosfos mean, hidar mitzvah?
Yourself.
Ah, you're doing it in a more beautiful way. If you do it yourself, you're doing it in a more beautiful way. Look in source number 8. This is exactly the example of Hanukkah, no? What's Mahadrin? Tanur Rabbanan. Mitzvah Hanukkah is ner Ishu Beso. Everyone just has to have one candle in the home. Vaha Mahadrim is ner Lekol Echad Echad. Stop right there. What's the Mahadrin of Neris Hanukkah? Nothing about the chetz of the object in front of you. What is it? More, you doing it yourself. And then the Mahadrim, Min Mahadrim, do more of those candles. But there's nothing about the chetza of the menorah or of the candle even that's more mehudah, that's more beautiful, like an Esor Na, like a Sefer Torah Na, like a Lulav Na. You doing the mitzvah yourself is a hidder. Like Tosfos is telling us in Maseches Brachos. Another idea in source number 7, you have a mission in the beginning of Arvei Pesachim, which says that on Erev Pesach, that's why the parish is called Arvei Pesachim. On Erev Pesach, Erev Yantif, on Pesach, so you're not supposed to eat Samach Lemincha, you're not supposed to eat Samach to Chashecha to the end of the day. Why? So Rashi explains, because we want you to be able to eat the matzah l'teyavon. We want that night, when you're eating the matzah, you should be hungry. You should be starving for matzah, and the eating should be geschmack for you. What's the reason for that? Why do we want you to be hungry when you're eating matzah? Look in source number 8. What do you see in the bold? Mishum, hider, mitzvah. What's the hider mitzvah? It's a nicer piece of matzah? That's also a hider mitzvah, to get nice piece of matzah. That's true. But what's the hider mitzvah here when a person eats when they're hungry? How is that hider mitzvah, achilas matzah? Where's the hider? In your action. In your maisa. In the way you perform the mitzvah. So hider mitzvah, of course, applies to a lulav, to an esrog, to a sefer Torah, to the chetzah, to the object of the mitzvah. But you know where else hider mitzvah applies? To the person themselves, to the way they do the mitzvah. Rav Asher Weiss has a beautiful essay about this, and he explains, Rav Asher Weiss is a contemporary. He's probably come to visit LA in the past, I assume. Rav Asher Weiss has a beautiful explanation. He says, look at the Gemara again. What did the Gemara say? Zek helivan dayu, hisna'e lefanav b'mitzvos. What is becoming beautiful? Or better, who is becoming beautiful? Hisna'e lefanav b'mitzvos means you should beautify yourself through his mitzvos. You're supposed to make him yourself a more beautiful, more wholesome, more spirited person through the mitzvos. The mitzvah of hider mitzvah is not only in the chetza, but it's something that's supposed to be a vehicle for you to beautify yourself before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says Rav Asher Weiss, makes perfect sense then that hider mitzvah doesn't only apply to the object, to the inanimate object that you're using for the mitzvah, but to the way you do the mitzvah as well, to the maisa mitzvah, to the way that you set up the mitzvah, to the way you act during that mitzvah. In fact, it's fascinating. One of the examples here in the Gemara in source number 6, one of the examples is that when you're making a Sefer Torah, you should use a kulmus na'e. What's a kulmus na'e? A very beautiful quill. Okay, so the simple understanding, obviously, is that it means a quill that writes nicely so you can make a beautiful ksav in a Sefer Torah. When you look at a Torah, some of them are better writing, some of them are worse writing. Depends on the handwriting, depends on the style of the quill, of course. So have a beautiful quill, meaning write beautifully. But what else might it mean?
The
scribe and what he's holding, the utensil itself that he's using for the mitzvah should be beautiful. Meaning, is there a hider mitzvah when a person's doing a bris milah to use a golden knife instead of a, I don't know, a metal knife? Is there a hider mitzvah when a person's doing, writing a Sefer Torah to use a golden pen instead of a regular plastic pen? You know what the answer might be? You would think not, because the mitzvah is the Sefer Torah. But what do we just learn? The way you do it is part of the hider. The way the sofer is writing the scroll involves his kavana, it involves his handwriting, it involves the parchment, it involves everything about the Sefer Torah, but additionally it involves the maisa ha-mitzvah, the way the person is doing the mitzvah. If he uses a beautiful pen, that also could be a hider mitzvah. In the maisa ha-mitzvah, in the mishamshei ha-mitzvah, in the machshirei ha-mitzvah, this is where the post can come from. Not everyone agrees to this, but some people, ever see the people go to shul with the silver esrog holders?
Yeah.
Before they melt them down and sell them, you know what I'm talking about. So those silver esrog, is there anything to that? Is there anything to that? A silver esrog holder? I usually go with a cardboard box to shul with my esrog. But some people have a beautiful esrog holder. What's that about? Hider mitzvah? Why is that a hider mitzvah? What's the mitzvah? The esrog that's inside. What's mehudar about using a beautiful esrog holder? What's the answer? apparently everything associated with the mitzvah. The Gemara says, Shirayin shel Sefer Torah, the mantle, the cover that you put on top of the Sefer Torah should also be beautiful. The way we do the mitzvahs, the way we associate with those mitzvahs should be beautiful. That's also a kiyum in Hidr Mitzvah. With that, maybe you understand what the concept of Hidr Mitzvah here is by the Neros Chanukah, that it's not only about the fire, the flame, the wick, the oil, but it's also about the menorah itself. Not because the menorah is part of the mitzvah necessarily. It's not that you need a kli for the mitzvah of Neros Chanukah, but it's because the way you light those Neros Chanukah has to be with hiddur, has to be with beauty, and you should chase a beautiful menorah in order to do the mitzvah in the most beautiful way possible. If you flip to page number 2, and we'll do this very briefly because I don't want to go too late, you could skip source number 9, but you could look at it on your own time. It's a beautiful hesped that the Rav gave for a friend of his who was a conservative rabbi in Massachusetts. I actually wrote this in Chakira, volume 30. It's my publication. We found this eulogy. I wrote it up, published it, and annotated it. So if you look inside, there's I think, a lot there. But this paragraph is relevant to what we're talking about. We'll skip it for now. If you look in source number 10, Rav Pinkus develops a very, very beautiful, beautiful mahalach. He notes that there's a big war, a big machlokes, a big fight between the Jewish people in Yavan, the Jewish people in Greece. What is that fight about? What is that whole fight about? What do we believe? What do the Greeks believe? What's Yavan? What's Yisrael? What are we fighting over? So he says that you'll know, everyone knows this, Yafta Lakim Yefes, that Yavan, represented by its forefather Yefes, is all about beauty, is all about physical beauty, about exposing the human body, about art, about culture. That's what Greece was all about. And Rav Pinkus says they looked at the Jewish people and they saw a Beis HaMikdash, the most splendid, most beautiful, most majestic building that ever existed, and they saw beauty by the Jewish people. And they said, we need that. We need to have that. And so that was the fight. They needed to conquer Hod. They needed to conquer Hadar, Hither. They needed to conquer the beauty of what the Jewish people had, and they needed to bring it into Yavan, into Greece, into their culture. But the Rav Pinkus explains it's even deeper than that. He says, you know, we live in a world that's physical, but everything we know is physical is mirrored upwards in an Olam HaElyon. There's an Olam HaElyon, an upper world, and an Olam HaTachton, a lower world. So we live in a physical lower world, but we're always striving for something bigger, something more spiritual, something above that. Anything that exists in extreme, says Rav Pinkus, always has a bridge, always has a nexus, something which connects those two worlds. What connects this world, the Olam HaTachton, the lower world, to the Olam HaElyon? What connects us above? So he says, Al Pi Kabbalah, but it's interesting to understand even without Kabbalah. What connects us to the upper world is really Hadar, is beauty. When a person sees something beautiful, something majestic, something breathtaking, they feel, their neshama feels a pining for that thing. Their neshama feels attracted, they're pulled in like a magnet. It's something that draws a person in and inspires them and really lights their neshama on fire. Hadar, hither, beauty, draws a person in. And Rav Pinkus says, that's the link, that's the bridge between our world and the Olam HaElyon. Both the Jewish people and the Greek people understood that. They saw hither, they saw hadar, and they saw in front of them a bridge between this world, our physical Gashmi world, and the world of Ruchnias, the Olam HaElyon. And the Yevanim saw that bridge and they said, we need to conquer that hadar, that hither, and bring that world down into this world and make it physical. All that beauty, we need to try to find a way to make it more physical, more attractive, more available to us, more usable, more utility from that beauty. But the Jewish people saw hither, they saw hadar, and they said, how do we get from this world to the Olam HaElyon? How do we use that very same bridge to go in the opposite direction, to go upwards, to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to go towards Ruchnias? How do we use that nexus, that bridge, as the meeting place between this world and the next, and bring ourselves to a higher level, elevate ourselves? That is the victory of Chanukah, that we have a Mahadrin, Min HaMahadrin, that we have a Hidr Mitzvah in our Neros, that we look at beauty, that we look at physicality, that we look at the Gashmis that we have in this world, not as something which is supposed to be dragged down into the mud of vanity and vulgarity and beauty as its own ends, but beauty as a means, Hidr as a means to a Hidr Mitzvah, Hadar as a means to an Esrog, the ability to use the beauty that we find, the elegance that we find in this world, to transport us, to elevate us, Hisna'e Lefanav B'mitzvos. That's our goal on Chanukah. To conquer that Yavani mindset of thinking that hither is supposed to be brought down to here and do just the opposite. To take the hither and use it as a hither mitzvah. To elevate our mitzvos, to elevate ourselves, and to elevate the entire world so that even the Yavanim who still exist, they still exist, the Yavanim, that mindset still exists. But even they should see what true beauty is, what true hither is. That it's not just physicality. That it's not just the vanity and the vulgarity of what our world calls beauty and hither. But it's the hod v'hadar lefanav. It's the hishtachavu lefanav v'hadar's kodesh. It's the bowing down to HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of the awe of his beauty, but also the hope to come closer to him and to elevate ourselves, hisna'i lefanav lemitzvah. So we should all take upon ourselves, as we look for a menorah, as we look for beautiful wicks, as we look for a beautiful candle and a place to light our menorah, to focus on that beauty, to internalize that beauty, but use that hither as a vehicle through the mitzvos to elevate ourselves to the Olam HaElyon. Thank you so much for joining. It was such a pleasure to learn together, and hopefully we'll have more opportunities to do so in the future. B'siyat Tishmaya.